Varicosity Vein Center, providing vein treatment relief for vein disease, spider veins, and varicose veins for over 20 years. Their team of doctors and vein specialists deliver techniques and care for residents in Jackson, Madison, Ridgeland, and Central Mississippi. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.
Deep South Dining is the show all about the culture of Southern flavor, from fried chicken and collard greens to shrimp and grits and a glass of sweet tea. Subscribe now to the podcast using any podcast app or download our MPB Public Media app.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulture's Fell to Rushing, and we're going to be talking about gardening today. Java, how was Philadelphia, PA this past weekend? We went there with the MPB business?
Yeah, we had a public radio conference, and it was a good time. It was a very great time. Philadelphia has three, to show you how big the city is in comparison to Mississippi. We have one here in Jackson that serves the whole state. They have three within the city limits of Philadelphia, three public radio stations. But yeah, it was great. Ate a lot of cheesesteaks.
I was thinking cheesesteak. They, you know,
more than I should have, but you know, you always find the good spots outside of the touristy destinations. Had to go deep into the neighborhood to find the best cheesesteak from a place called Angelo's, and you know it was good because they only take cash.
Well, listen, I've got a big day today. Got plenty of stuff to talk about. Got a real special friend of mine here. But before we get to that, let me mention that last night I got lost going to a place called Noxipater.
Now,
I've been to Noxipater twice. You know, it's between Philadelphia and Louisville up in north central Mississippi. And I found a back road to it. I mean, my GPS took me down a gravel road. But I got there. It's a quaint little town. It's one of those little intact, you know, Mayberry-type places. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say that, except it's a compliment. Cool, you know, flower boxes everywhere. But a friend of mine named Faith Estes set up a meeting there for gardens. They got the Pass Along Plant Group. We had over 100 people in Noxipater, including a couple that drove over from Tuscaloosa, and a couple of ladies who made one of their husbands drive them up from Pearl. And it was a blast. It was a blast. And real folks, and it's one of the best plant swaps I've ever seen.
And tomorrow, am I correct? Tomorrow you're going to be in Columbus.
I'm going to back my green truck with all the stuff, and I'm going to back it up to the Hitchin Lot Farmer's Market.
Yes, sir.
It's a corner of 2nd and 2nd. 2nd Avenue, 2nd Street, downtown. I'm going to be there probably about 9 or so, but I'm going to give a little talk from the back of the truck about 10. You know, MPB is sponsoring this, and also the downtown Columbus folks. But we're going to be whooping it up. If people have stuff you want to talk about, bring show and tell. But Farmer's Market, I'm going to be in my truck, and at 10 o'clock, I'm going to give a little talk from the back. So anybody wants to show up, bring a chair. Let's have a good time. It's a great Farmer's Market, too. So anyway, we got a couple of other things coming up in a couple of weeks, so we can talk about this later. But I want to introduce a real special old friend of mine. I love this man to death, Mark Scootup. This is Mark Patrick. I call him Sir. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning. How are you?
You look nervous.
Nah.
It's been, you've been around. You've been around. We've known each other, 25 years?
Yeah.
First time I met you, Java, this guy called up, and I said, this is a little old lady who just got all these flowers and stuff, wants to come out and look at his yard. And he lived under near a bridge. You can look under a Pearl River Bridge somewhere. I don't know if it's Hinds County or where, but way out there by the Pearl River. And you had the most incredible garden that I've ever seen, with no horticulture training. Just you were raised right in the Ozarks.
Maybe that had something to do with it. Not exactly sure.
But this is an alligator garden has had alligators in it.
It did.
Explain.
On my birthday one year, it was May the 13th. I don't know what year. One of my neighbors had caught a baby alligator and put it in my yard so that when I came home from work, got out, he knew where I parked. So I'd get out I have to step over rabbit wire, which was for keep armadillos out.
Yeah.
And they had put it right where I step over the wire, and there was the baby alligator.
Wow.
See, Java, this is the reason you don't drive down these little country roads late at night, because if you break down, you're going to go up to these houses. They ain't got skirting or anything, and they got alligators.
In the garden.
As guard alligators.
I had skirting on my house, thank well, yeah,
you. But anyway, Mark worked for a long time at a major wholesale place. You sort of turned the perennial plant production thing around in Mississippi.
Yeah, I was at Standing Pine Nursery a decade, almost to the day.
Yeah, and producing back when you couldn't buy perennials, nobody grew perennials. You were doing that, and then you bounced over to another garden center in Jackson. Now you're at Martinson's Garden Work between, I'm gonna say Ridgeland, because you're closer to Ridgeland than you are Madison.
But yeah, you know, it's
if you're a Martinson, you're gonna say Madison.
No. Yeah, it is Ridgeland.
Anyway, cool place. Cool guy, an outstanding gardener. Welcome.
Thank you.
All righty. So, Java, you get the tune I sent?
Yeah, I just loaded it up from my email.
Okay, well, we're going to play it in just a little while, but it's really sort of a rock and roll thing. It's kind of a bluesy rock thing that came out in 1970. But the bad part about it is it was based on a tune called Let's Stick Together by Wilbert Harrison, who hit top 40 with it. But the rock and roll, the canned heat version, you know, the white version of it, kicked it off the charts. You know, that happened a lot, you know.
It is a thing.
But anyway, that's going to come up. What you got, Mark?
I was 5 years old in 1970. I probably don't remember it.
By the way, I am going to be at the Hitching Lot Farmer's Market Saturday morning. I'm going to talk starting around 10, but I'll be there. As a matter of fact, I'm staying overnight tomorrow, so make sure my truck makes it. Java, you know, when you drive an old truck?
Oh, I know. You have to set in travel time, and it's really make sure my truck is okay time.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be backing up to it. I've redone my garden in the back of the truck. I lost some stuff over the summer because I was gone, and it looks nice. And I will say that the reason it looks nice, I've been doing this since my son was in a baby seat, a child restraint seat. I've had a garden that long, 35, 36 years. But the only other person who has ever planted my truck, Mark Patrick. And I thank you, sir. But you know why? Because you get it.
I do get it.
We both like bold textures. We like color. We like, mixing stuff together so something dies you really can't tell. And we tend to, I'm going to say, over-accessorize.
I try not to.
Hey, we got a caller in from Memphis. I don't know if it's time to push the button or not.
Well, it's coming in. We have our intern, Will back there on the phones doing a good job.
He's dressed up today. Must be something important happening.
Hey, well, I'm going to say Will always is snazzy, man.
Yep. Well,
now we're good. We can go to Allison in Memphis.
Okay, Allison in Memphis. Good morning, Allison. How are you today?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. The first one is about fall blooming iris.
Yeah.
I have a cluster of them, and they bloomed in April this year. They bloomed really, really early.
Mm-hmm.
And then they died back, and now there's a couple of stalks that are reblooming. And I just didn't know if that was just a fluke of nature or if there's maybe, I don't know why they would do that, but.
Are these supposed to be rebloomers or you just happen to be reblooming? Because there are some that are reblooming irises, not many of them. But did you buy, okay. Is that what it's supposed to be? Or are you just saying, what the heck's going on? My irises are blooming again.
Yeah, I have no idea. They were given to me as a fall blooming iris.
Okay. Well, I don't know anything about them except that they do exist. And Mark.
Yeah. Okay.
Here's the deal. These irises like chrysanthemums. Well, they bloom according to a lot of different physiology things and environmental things. But anytime you have unusual weather. It's really hot, really dry, or a lot of wind or something. It stresses the plant. We're seeing, I've got an amaryllis blooming in my yard, and they only bloom in the spring. And I'm seeing a lot of spring blooming shrubs and vines blooming just because of stress. But apparently, you know, you've got a rebloomer. It should bloom fine in the spring as well as in the fall. This little group. Mark, you know anything about these rebloomers?
I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah.
I don't, you know names, whatever. I don't get real hung up on that. But it's all about day length.
Day length, that's right. And, you know, and I don't care if my iris is blooming. That's what Hobby Lobby is for. You go get you some blooming. I use iris in even in my truck garden because I like the foliage. So, Allison, anyway, if you can find anything more out about it, I'd like to learn something. I just know about them.
Okay.
I've heard about them. I don't know about them.
I have a question. Is the foliage like a lighter green, almost limey, as opposed to a dark green?
No, it's okay. Kind of just looks like a standard iris. You know, they're those tall leaves that kind of come to a point on top. Yeah.
Well, we'll do a little bit more research. I've heard of them a lot over the years. Not a lot, but over the years, but I just don't know anything about them.
Okay. I mean, the flower is huge.
Yeah.
It looks like an old-fashioned purple bearded iris, like that you're grandmother would grow.
Yeah. Well, the Iris Society in Memphis has got a huge iris display garden at the Botanic Garden. Matter of fact, there's nothing but iris. If you don't like iris, don't even go there. But, you know, I bet that they've got some rebloomers out there, and that'd be a good place where I'd try to learn something from them.
Okay, that's a good idea.
All righty. Well, okay, Allison, thank you for call.
Yes, well, I had a second question if we have time.
Sure.
It's about loofah.
Yep.
And I think it's been on the program the last two or three times or, you know, the last few weeks.
Right.
I have quite a stand of loofah plants growing in my backyard.
It's probably all the way up in the trees.
Well, we built a trellis, and we've, you know, the vines are somewhat controlled, I would say.
Yeah, gotcha.
But one of the questions I had is I have quite a bit of fruit that's developing. I'll say a dozen or so, but I've got maybe less fruit than I thought I would, and I'm not seeing a whole lot of female flower development. I see a lot of male flowers, but very few female, like, that actually bloom. They develop like little tiny, and then they kind of dry up and fall off. Why would that happen?
Mark, you hear that question all the time. Why don't I squash my cucumbers, whatever?
It could be a lot of things.
Yeah.
It could be stress. I've grown loofah, and when I have grown them in like one plant, they never really seem to produce prolifically like a cucumber. So if you've got a couple of large fruit, pick it, dry it, save the seed. Next year, maybe plant three or four instead of one.
Yeah. Mark says, there's a lot of different stress factors that cause the cucurbit family, the squash, the gourds, the loofahs, all those kind of things, that'll have sometimes more male or more female flowers. And also the pollinators, you know, that's an issue. So, you know, like Mark says, plant more.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Okay, Allison, appreciate it. Okay, let's slide down to Mandeville, Louisiana. Boy, we're going from top to bottom here. Mandeville, Peg, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, Felder. How about you?
So far, so good. Me and Mark are sitting here whooping it up. I've got coffee, and he's scared of it.
I'm not scared of it. I just already had mine for the day.
Yeah.
What's
going on, Peg?
Well, this year I have these white blotches on my Ruella. I've never had it before, and it's on the flowers and the leaves. It's not like the mealy bug or anything, but it's white splotches. First, I want to know what it is.
Yeah.
If I can prevent it. You know.
She says she got spots on her Mexican petunia, Mark. And by the way, you gave me a Mexican petunia a couple of years ago. You said it was dwarf. It ain't dwarf.
Dwarf just means it's smaller than the original variety, okay?
Well, mine's not.
Sorry.
Mexican petunia, Aruelia, it's a really durable. A lot of you either like it or you don't. I love it, but I keep mine where it can't get away from. I'm not really surprised at any kind of leaf spots with the kind of weather we're having.
I would say just walk by and don't look so close.
Take your glasses off and it probably goes away.
Yeah.
It's probably a little fungal infection because of our humidity and all, but, you know, these plants, they grow in cemeteries. And if you've got pretty good dirt or you've watered it or something like that, you know, we're going to have a few leaf spots. But, you know, and it's so late in the year.
Yeah, it's got a lot, and you know, on each, I have a lot of stands, different places, and some of them don't have it. But I've never had it before, so my guess is I'm going to cut it back, throw that away, and next year it's...
Yeah, you know, just a few weeks it could have died down anyway. Well, not in Mandeville.
Not in Mandeville.
So, yeah, I would just the bad looks of stuff, go ahead and cut it back now. You may have time for it to sprout back out and bloom again, but just cut it way back.
Yeah.
But there's no cure for diseases, fungal diseases. Fungicides are protective films, sort of like putting sunscreen on. You don't wait till you're burned before you put the sunscreen on. So, you know, if you've got leaf spots, whether it's on Ruellia or roses or whatever, you have to apply it to keep it from coming on uninfected stuff. So it's too late to do that. And just cut them back.
Yeah. Well, I think it's only on that Ruellia, so I'm wondering.
I'd cut it back and keep an eye on it. If it comes back with it, in the food industry, when they're out or something, they have a term that's called 86 it. It means get rid of it. But I don't know that I would throw it in a compost. You can have a compost pile of just Ruellia.
Yeah. I'll just pitch it, but I didn't know if it was a mite or a fungus or whatever.
You know, without seeing a picture, without seeing it, you know, I got to make the patient say before we know what it is. So anyway, just cut it back and see if it comes back okay.
All right. I'm not the only one in the neighborhood. I've seen it on other people's plants, too.
Well, then, since, you know, if you could get a good, clear, close-up picture of it, a good, clear one, and send it to me, you know, go to failurushing.blog and send it to me, then, you know, I can tell if it's spider mite or leaf spot or whatever.
Okay. I'll do that.
Okay, Peg.
Thank y'all. Stay
cool.
All right. I'll try. Bye-bye.
Java, we got a guest lined up.
And he is ready.
Okay, we're going to be talking to, there's a lot of stuff going on people's lawns right now, and I got the top dog, Mark. By the way, she was from Mandeville. I noticed on the Facebook thing, Mississippi Gardening and your own Facebook thing, you posted a thing about May Vitakovich. She's a
Louis. Oh, yes,
she has an incredible tropical plant garden in Lafayette, Louisiana. She posts on Mississippi Garden. I've been to her garden, and her garden and your garden are so tropical and lush with big flowers and big foliage. It's just incredible.
You know what I'm doing?
No.
If you use the right sunscreen, it smells like cologne.
Okay, get out of here. Horticulturist Phil Rushing. We've got a real special guy, Dr. James McCurdy, who's the extension turf specialist at Mississippi State University. Jay, you with me?
Yeah, thanks, Felder. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you because, you know, it's been probably 40 years since I studied turf management at Mississippi State, and you're the guy now, and I got questions. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. First of all, how long have you been doing the turf thing professionally?
I will have been the state turfgrass extension specialist for 10 years this coming January.
Wow, long time. You've seen some stuff come and go. And you're originally from Mississippi?
No, I'm from up around Jackson, Tennessee. I grew up on a sod farm up there.
Okay.
And so I kind of came up through the industry and intuitively know grass, which sometimes gets me in trouble.
Yeah. Well, and matter of fact, that's the reason I want to talk to you, because you have a foot in two different sides of this field of grass. One is turf management, producing it, getting the most, the quickest, the sturdiest, the healthiest, and getting it out the door in somebody's yard and doing it all over again. So you know about getting grass started, right? But you,
a little bit about that, yeah. But we also, like you, dabble in some low maintenance, quote unquote, you know, sustainable alternatives.
Yeah, what we used to call mow what grows.
That's right.
Because when I was a kid, you know, I thought clover and dandelions and stickers, I just thought that was part of having a lawn, and I couldn't go swim until I got through mowing it. And as soon as you mow that kind of stuff, it comes right back. But then I studied turf management at Mississippi State, and I learned some stuff that gave me cognitive dissonance. You know, if I say you need to water once a week, my dad would laugh me to the curb. But if you don't...
There's a lot of unwatered lawns, aren't there, Felder? They look pretty good.
Well, that's the reason I wanted to call you, because right now in Jackson, I just got back from up in Winston County. I've driven around the state, and I've seen some lawns suffer over the years. But it looks like some of them have lost all their carbohydrate reserve. Look like they are dead. I've never seen this before. What are you seeing around the state, Doc?
Yeah, especially in the northern part of the state, we experienced a really hard winter, and then you combine that with a sort of slow green up and a slow start to the summer.
And a late frost. Just when it was green up, we got a late frost.
And then we had a prolonged drought. I know some of you down there around Rankin and Hinds County didn't see rain for maybe 35 or 45 days.
90.
So we've got a lot of lawns that are really hard up and are not going to look great unless we get a mild winter and a really good growing season next spring. Maybe we'll get some timely rainfalls this fall and that can steadily improve some of the conditions, but I'm not too optimistic like you on certain lawns.
Well, my next door neighbor, she hadn't done anything. I mean, her grass is brown. I was looking at her pulling the stolons up and stuff, and I mean they're dead. They are dead. Some people say, well, it always happens, they'll green back up, but I'm not sure about this year. We're having an Oklahoma summer here, Doc.
Yeah, I think in some situations we really should be right now probably doing a little bit of repair irrigation, and what I mean by that is trying to get some of that stuff to come back, whatever will come back before we fall off into the fall and winter temperature conditions. And then there's going to be a lot of folks that are considering reestablishment. I think we're a little bit late for reestablishment for warm season grasses unless we're sodding, or maybe we could do a little bit of late season seeding with certain species, but
really,
we need to be making need to make a game plan for what we're going to do next year if we have any inkling that we've had a hard winter this coming season. We need to be thinking about reestablishment.
Well, here's a couple of things. Of course, you being a turf guy, you're going to think reestablished turf. First of all, how can people tell if the grass? Can you predict whether it's going to do okay or not? Just looking at it right now.
In certain conditions, you can make some very pragmatic decisions about what we should do, and I don't think you can ever outguess Mother Nature. So I would dare say, you have to have a conversation with yourself or with your specialist or your county agent.
Do I really want to water all this stuff?
Because.
Well, one of the things that I'm most concerned about is we have a lot of thin grass, a lot of thin lawns out there, and there's a whole bunch of people are going to have more weeds than they normally do. You know, and your counterpart's over in weed science, and you work real close together. Is there anything people need to do now? Because pre-emerge is not going to work yet. I mean, it's just there's no rain here. Anything people need to do to their lawns now? It's too late to fertilize, right?
Well, I would not say it's too late to fertilize if we are smart about it. And what I mean by that is there are instances where we can use some slower release, low nitrogen containing products to try to build a little bit of nitrogen reserves for those grasses when they do start to get some timely rainfalls, I hope in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But it's not, I don't think it's too early for a pre-emerge, and I oftentimes have a conversation with a homeowner and say, look, if you've got centipede or St. Augustine grass, you can put out a product like a granular atrazine containing product like Scott's Bonus S is one that's commercially available. And you can get a slow release nitrogen source, in fact, a really good nitrogen source, and the preventative and some post-emergence reach back of control of some of the weeds that are already there. But it's about what you want. If you're trying to overseed this fall, or if you've got Bermuda or Zoysia grass, I don't often recommend that Scott's Bonus S product.
Yeah. So but if you're not avid lawn care person, if you're not really avid, you're just a mow it grows kind of person. Basically, if you can water it at all, give it a soaking, and then wait till spring and see what happens. Right.
I think, philosophically, you've got to make a decision whether or not you want a lawn. And for some folks, that's not a hard decision. For others, it is a debate. But if you want to have lawn grasses and it is suffering through a prolonged drought like we've got right now, some irrigation, perhaps an inch of water, supplemental water per week, would go a long way to keeping that little, that little bit of grass that you might want to keep. So around high traffic areas, areas where your children play, those types of areas, I think certainly water would be the standard agronomic recommendation.
Yeah, well, and I appreciate that. And before I let you go, I got a real big question. When I was studying, of course, I studied horticulture at State and then education and all, my professor said things that do not change remain the same. And if you don't want to water your grass or not able to, you're not able to take good care of it, can you reasonably expect to have a good lawn? Or is this an opportunity, Doc, to switch over to, you've been working with this refuge lawn, a flower lawn. Is it, may this be a good year to switch over to putting a few deliberate, low-growing weeds like white clover out there and just go into a mow what grows, which is antithesis of what we studied at Mississippi State. We want to learn how to do it the best. Is there a way to help people feel okay about doing something that just mow what grows and feel good about it? Is it possible?
Well, the best is an outcome that is desirable by the person that's you know,
right,
growing
right,
this or
right.
culturing this lawn. And I think that there is a discerning listeners, you know, stakeholder group for me, but listener base for you, that really understands that it's not as simple as just a monoculture aesthetic. It really is about ecosystem service, and that may be pollinator habitat. It may be low maintenance, low input, but certainly improving that lawn with a white clover this fall would be the time to do it. Now, I don't steer people towards white clover very often. I've helped with writing articles about how to do that. I studied that as a PhD project.
We mostly studied how to get rid of it, though.
Yeah. Well, mine was purposely including that white clover.
Yeah.
There are some other alternatives, and so I would encourage folks to look on local or regional seed suppliers for some of these low-maintenance meadow lawn or forage lawn, refuge lawn type mixes.
Yeah.
I would say that we are including some things like lawn aster, which is a really common,
it's in bloom right now. Drought is not bothering at all. So, so this might be an opportunity. I know you're working with folks from Texas A&M and the North Carolina State, all these folks looking for ways to attract, you know, to have a lawn that's a little bit more eco-friendly, but still is a lawn, not a meadow, but a lawn. And this might be an opportunity, Doc, to get people to come off instead of, you know, you can have a lawn of the month sign, or you could have a meadow, you know, a refuge lawn type thing, and make it where it's okay to not feel bad about having a few weeds out there.
I think you used the term mullet lawn with the business in the front, party in the back, Elder.
That's right. Well, listen, we got to move on. I mean, we can talk for hours about this, but people need to understand that Mississippi State has got people who are on this. If you got questions about it, contact County Extension Office. But if you can't water right now, not really much sense in fertilizer or anything, is it?
Not a whole lot. I agree with you. Maybe we'll get some rainfall soon. Felder, I appreciate being on.
Okay, Doc. Good to talk to you, and we're going to have you back, man. Appreciate you. Java.
Sometimes you got to say thank you. Thank you, Jay.
Thank you, Jay. Oh, by the way, Mark, you had a joke.
There's so much to unpack from that call.
Come on.
Number one, I think mullets are back, actually.
you and Java don't have a blade of hair on top of your head. You're talking about mullets?
I know where to get one, I promise. The other one was a joke that a customer just blurted out yesterday.
This is at Garden Works.
At Garden Works. Yeah. And I was just kind of passing by. This guy is hilarious. And he was asking about, I don't know, something, sod, something. He goes, yeah, well, my yard sounds like I'm walking on cornflakes. It was probably stickers cracking.
Yeah, it's tough out there. You know, I don't have a blade. I study turf management. Java, I don't have a blade of grass in my yard. Somebody said, how can you be a lawn expert with no grass? I said, look, a brain surgeon doesn't have to have a tumor. You know, so I just, you know, if I had a lawn, it would be a throw rug, put a sprinkler out there, turn it on. Wherever that one sprinkler goes, that's where your lawn is. And the sprinkler doesn't reach it. That's where you start putting other stuff. And it shines like a little gem. Shines like a gem.
I have free centipede if anybody wants to come dig it.
Okie dokie, folks. Horticulturist Phil Rushy. And before we go to Judy, let me mention this. Java, you and Mark were talking about you're drinking some energy stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to perk up, man.
Perk up. Well, Mark lost a whole bunch of weight, and he's saying you don't need to be doing that. Well, let me just mention this. I found out in my old age, you young guys, pay attention. You don't have to eat the whole dozen tamales.
Well, oh, wait a minute. I thought it was like written
down
somewhere.
But if you don't eat at least half a dozen, you're not going to be happy, and you get all wrinkled. So we need to stay juicy.
It's all about balance.
There you go. Hey, let's go to Clint. Mark, take this call.
I certainly will. Good morning, Judy.
Hello. First of all, the information about the turfgrass was very helpful. Thank you for that. My question, I bought a house a couple of years ago that has huge fig trees. I cut them back the first year so that they were a little more manageable, and they had a whole crop of beautiful green figs that never ripened. This year they froze, so I cut the frozen part back. They had another crop of beautiful figs that never ripened. Can you tell me what the problem is?
Not exactly. Everything is kind of off schedule this year, and
yeah.
Figs tend to do that on a normal year. Sometimes
a lot of people are real. A fig is not a fruit, it's a flower.
Right.
And hot, dry, wet, Mark, your flowers.
Yeah, sometimes they just hang out and they never ripen. You could probably still eat them. They probably taste awful, but.
Yeah, other than a little water, because, you know, they're flowers. And a plant suffers, the first thing it's going to suffer the flowers. And so, other than an occasional good soaking, make sure it's got a nice wide root and a lot of mulch.
Are they planted near a home or. You know, concrete foundation, anything like that?
You know, my fig got damaged this past winter.
Well, I've always heard that, you know, I think Joe Ogletree told me that figs like for the roots to be shaded. We had them at the nursery, and they would go up under foundations,
and
they were always loaded.
Yeah.
But he kept his piled with mulch.
Yeah. Well, and that's what, you know, I keep mine trained as a cut as a bush. Every time it puts out some growth, I cut it back a little bit to make it bushy. So as it has more figs, it's easier to take care of. But you're right, a lot of mulch, you know, they're Mediterranean plants. They don't like a lot of rain, but they need cooler roots than we have here. So anyway, there are some different varieties that do a whole lot better than others. But let me ask you something, Mark. You've been working with perennials for a long time, okay?
About 25 years.
Yeah. You're growing a lot of them. And matter of fact, you sort of drove the market towards that. They were plants that people never heard of. And when they heard of them, they couldn't get them. So you were producing a lot, you know, when you were at Standing Pines. Now people come in, they're hungry for any kind of color. And, you know, Martinson's the place where you work. It's not like a big box store. You choose plants that you want in your garden, not whether does it look good in a pot.
Well, yes and no. Yes and no. Well, I'm a 9 out of 10 guy, you know, drive around the neighborhood, and if 9 out of 10 yards don't have it, it probably doesn't do well there. but we get pushed to do, you know, some things that maybe we don't completely agree with, you know.
Well, a lot of plants are throwaway plants. I mean, you know, you got to have tulips, you got to have marigolds, and they're not going to last all the time. Color is important. You know, color is real important. But when it comes to perennial plants, whether they come back or not, have you learned anything in your yard from this year?
I learn something every day. You know, I'm like SpongeBob. I did learn some stuff. That I'd rather have St. Augustine than Centipede.
Why? Because it...
It's handling the weather way better.
Yeah. You know? We've said, I lost a magnolia tree, a little Jim magnolia, and I got a question on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook. They said, have you noticed these little dwarf-type magnolia? Everywhere I look, the little Jim, the little dwarf-type thing, including right here in front of MPB, I mean, they're just... They're brown. Somebody, well, they'll come back out. No, mine's dead.
Yeah.
Mine's 15 years old. It's dead.
But I bet if I went back where I used to live on the Pearl River out into the woods and there's a big grandiflora,
I bet
it's beautiful.
And it has roots that are probably 15, 30 yards
and
out there.
I bet you could climb it.
Yeah. Did I tell you what I did with mine instead of cutting it down?
I don't know. You're going to make a stump out of it, aren't you?
Nope. Spray painted it glossy black.
Of course you did.
I did. Java. I could have gone. You know, there's a country song about Charlene. You know, the guy painted his girlfriend's name. The whole town said it should have used red, but it looked good to Charlene and John Deere green.
She thinks my tractor's.
That's right. Well, anyway, I spray painted mine black, and it looked great. I could have gone with brown. I could have gone with red or orange or green or whatever. But that little glossy black spot in my yard, it just makes me smile. And somebody said, well, why do you do that? I said, why not?
Why not? That's what I was just about to say. You took the words out of my mouth, Fielder. Why not?
Because I can.
That's right. So anybody can cut a plant down. or they can just sit there and look at it, or bob it back and put limbs on it. Bottles on the branches. I spray painted my glossy. Got a garden tour coming up in 2 weeks. I'm going to be at the Max in Meridian on October the 7th. Going to be there at the Max. And on October the 8th, we have this thing called the Fondren Bottle Tree Garden Tour with people like Becky Potts and who have all these crazy gardens, and mine's going to be on tour. So my glossy black magnolia tree is going to be front and center. What, Mark?
I'm jealous because I'll probably be working, or nobody's going to want to drive to Rankin County to see my bottle tree.
Nope.
We got Mikey on the line. Good morning, Mikey. How are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Look, it's finally gotten cool enough at night that I can sleep.
I've had a little trouble sleeping lately, too, but, yeah, it didn't have anything to do with temperature, I don't think. What can we do for you today?
When it's 105 degrees, you know, outside during the day, and it only cools down to 90 at night, you kind of get that, right?
Exactly. I do get it. I do.
Yeah. So anyway, especially, well, you're not old yet, I'm imagining. But anyway, I wanted to comment that that we have I remember even reading gardening magazines when I was much younger. That blue is the hardest color to find for gardening, for gardeners to put into their areas. And right now we are so blessed with a plant that is so easy. In fact, it's so easy that you have to really rein it in. And, I mean, you know, put it in a pot because it will take over.
I'm so curious what plant you're talking about, because there is a little bit of truth to the blue thing, but, you know, there's a lot of shades of blue out there.
And it's blooming beautiful. This is a cobalt blue, and this is called, some people call it a Chinese medicine plant, platycodon, I think.
I'm pronouncing it
horribly. But
that's a beautiful shade plant. Yeah,
it is. Well, it's just a beautiful plant. It doesn't get too large. It only gets about, 3 feet high, maybe?
If you live in Mobile, you must have it planted under a big live oak.
No, I have it in full sun.
Okay.
I've seen it. People grow it under live oaks. And, it's like the full sun ones. I'm going to have to start digging some. And I've already dug some, but I'm going to have to start digging some and, you know, passing them along.
Absolutely. Share them.
I want to also add that all parts of the plant are edible.
Oh, that's great information.
According to Baker's Creek, you know, and I'm sure you're familiar with them. According to Baker's Creek, yeah.
You can eat your balloon flowers. That's great news.
And the roots and the leaves.
But be sure and tell your kids not to eat their balloons, right?
Yeah.
I tell the kids that I work with, don't eat anything unless I'm there and give it to you.
That's right. Well, thanks for calling, okay. Mikey.
Bye-bye.
She said, balloon flower. I have a hard time growing it, but I'm not a good gardener. I'm a garden expert. You know, I dig dirt. I put stuff in it. If it can't make it, you know, I put something else in a hole. But have you got some favorite blue flowers?
You don't do that to me.
I mean, you know, there's blue salvias. You were the first person really to start growing those in Mississippi, perennial blue salvias.
My very all-time favorite flower of all is a bearded iris.
Yeah.
But I have two. Don't put me on the spot like that.
Well, I tell you a little trick about blue. A lot of people don't realize this because the late, great Lois McKenzie, she was a garden writer for the Northside Sun for years. You know, your boss, Alan Martinson, writes for the Northside Sun now.
Absolutely.
Real chatty guy, by the way.
Knows his stuff. Garden, dig it.
But she was fascinated with blue. And it's hard to find blue here.
It is. But, you know, you can do a gazing ball that's blue.
That's right. A blue milk and magnesia bottles.
What about a 4-foot blue Chinese.
Okay.
I have one. I'm not making that up.
Well, here's the deal about blue. One of the reasons why plants don't look as blue here, you know, people go to England, they say, or Seattle. The colors are so vivid. The angle of the sun going through, this is one of those, okay, bring it on, Java, a question.
And now, here's Felder Rushing with answers to unasked questions.
Thank you for asking. Why don't blue look as good? Because of the angle of the sun. You go further north like Seattle, New England, England, Europe, the sun is such an angle that it filters out certain wavelengths of light, and colors like blue and green really pop visually. Whereas here, the sun's higher up, the reds, the oranges, the yellows predominate, the warmer colors. So you can take a picture of a flower here and then take it to Seattle or England, take that same picture, and it's going to look bluer from the angle of the sun.
Just another reason, you get up early, you take photographs before the sun comes up.
You're right.
It's true. Different angle. Everything is prettier in the morning.
I just learned something.
You knew that.
I didn't think about it. I never thought about that. The sun's at a different lower angle in the morning, late in the afternoon.
You taught me years ago how to use a toilet paper tube to take photos, and you didn't know that.
Java, I just learned something. I didn't even ask it.
Nah, I didn't know that about the toilet paper, too.
You're welcome.
No, you look at a toilet. See, when you have a complicated garden, Mark's got a lot of stuff in his garden. I got a lot of stuff. People have too much stuff for the neighbors. It's too much to take in. If you look at it through a camera lens, you see little vignettes everywhere. And if you look at your yard through a toilet paper roll, you see those little vignettes. And that's how people like us see our garden. The neighbors say, it's crazy. You got too much stuff out there. Well, so we focus on little vignettes here and there. And if you're not able to do that easily, walk around your yard with a toilet paper tube and find something that looks pretty.
Because they're going to talk about you anyway.
That's right.
Speaking of neighbors, I got some new neighbors, and they are so awesome. And the new bed I built is like on the property line.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't really met them. And I started putting in all these heirloom plants, you know, the big tall cane. And
yeah.
I'm like, you know, I really ought to go introduce myself because they're going to think I'm trying to hide them. And now that I got to know them, hey, they're great.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
awesome.
Well, there's a lot of people are concerned about the heat wave. It still can, it's getting cooler. Tomorrow is the first day. Java said tomorrow. I always thought it was like the 22nd. You say tomorrow is the first day of autumn.
Yeah, the autumn equinox happens tomorrow.
Happy fall, y'all. What we're doing tomorrow at Garden Works?
Pumpkins.
Yoga.
Oh, God. I don't want to go there.
I'm not kidding.
Folks, we've been whooping it up today. Mark, it's been a while since you've been here. Good to see you again, man.
Thank you.
And you got a great garden. I see pictures of your garden on your Facebook page and on your blog, on the Mississippi Gardening Facebook.
Yeah, every now and then.
Yeah.
People
are showing pictures of their gardens that look great. And I can tell you, those folks who got gardens that look great are watering. A little fertilizer, a little watering. If you're not able to water, that's okay. I'm here to tell you, I don't either, but we just understand it don't look that good. And I've got some plants that don't look great because I didn't do what they need because of my lack of wanting to do that stuff. So what I'm doing is I'm letting my plants thin themselves out. I'm learning about tough plants, one dead one at a time.
That's a good lesson.
I learned that from Marshall Ramsey. That was on his program this past week. He said, you're learning about tough plants, one dead plant at a time. So anyway, it's really weird. What are you doing? We just got a minute left. What are you doing this weekend in your garden when you get home besides watering?
Probably not a lot.
You getting ready for fall?
In my yard?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I don't blow it out. You know, mums are disposable, and I shouldn't say that, but.
No, but you've got containers, and it's easy to shift things in and out seasonally. Yeah.
And I wanted to give a shout out to a Facebook page I'm sure you don't follow because you don't live there. It's Cross Gates Gardens.
Yeah,
I would. No, yeah,
I try to keep it general because I'm a whole statewide kind of guy. And when you start getting into the local stuff, the people on the coast says that doesn't grow for me.
Right.
Tupelo said, well, it grows fine for me, and vice versa. So you know, it's got to keep it between the ditches on that. But I know the Louisiana people have got a really good site, but it's more subtropical than what most of us have in here in Mississippi.
So, I need to start my own garden club in Rankin County.
There you go. There you go. Mark, thanks for joining us this morning. Java Chapman and all the folks here at MPB. Java's been kind of rocking. We didn't take a lot of calls. We did a lot of yakking.
But we got to thank Jay McCurdy for joining us.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Dr. James McCurdy from Mississippi State. If you're not able to water, don't fertilize. If you can't do any of that stuff, just hunker down. Think about converting your lawn into at least part of it a meadow lawn. Get you some white clover or something. You don't have to be it could be a throw rug of grass and the rest of it clover and stuff. So this is the chance to make things better in the long run. If you get a chance, take a kid to Farmer's Market. Show them how to do what we do best, folks. And I'm going to be at the Hitchin Lot Farmer's Market tomorrow morning in my pickup truck. And, folks, it's getting dirty.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast. To hear previous shows, visit mpbonline.org or download the MPB Public Radio app to listen on your iPhone or Android phone on demand.